From KCRW, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
Yeah, I mean, I like a bit of stress, you know. I like pressure. If you don't do the job.
A bit of stress, that's how Sir Ridley Scott describes his daring response to the disaster that almost befell his latest movie, All the Money in the World. When news broke at the end of October that Kevin Spacey, who played billionaire J. Paul Getty in the film, had been accused of sexual assault, Scott decided almost instantly to cut Spacey from his movie and replace him with Christopher Plummer. Scott had just 6 weeks to reassemble his cast and reshoot 22 scenes with Plummer in the role, a feat that some said was impossible. In the end, the film missed its original release date by just 3 days. But first on the News Banter, after an industry-disrupting 2017, what lies ahead? Stick around, it's The Business from KCRW. Today we are a trio in banter. Of course, you have me, Michael Schneider of IndieWire, and Matt Bellany of The Hollywood Reporter. Michael is here in the studio with me, and Matt, annoyingly, is doing this from Hawaii on his vacation.
Annoying for you, maybe.
Yeah, yes. How he pulled that off.
Yes, but we wish you a very good vacation, but one of us is very sick with envy, and possibly both of
you
us.
You assume somewhere. I'm coming back.
Yes, I do assume that. I expect that any time now. I know you love the news. And speaking of which, let's look at the year ahead. So we have several huge deals pending. The biggest is AT&T Time Warner, which seemed to be sailing along so smoothly that they actually appointed a new head of Time Warner, John Stankey, who is a real, we at The Hollywood Reporter did the first post-announcement interview with him, and I can tell you, that guy is quite a suit who was used to talking about data, not a content guy, let's put it that way. I asked him what his favorite shows were, and he sort of paused and said he and his wife like Downton Abbey, which I don't think is the thing you really ideally say if you're taking over Time Warner. But now, possibly because of legitimate antitrust concerns and or because Trump doesn't like CNN,
yeah,
Mike?
Yeah. I mean, I think the issue here is of all the deals for the Department of Justice to suddenly get concerned over consolidation, with so much consolidation into this industry, this is the one. It just smacks of Donald Trump's hatred of CNN and letting politics and emotion get into the deal making. There's some legitimate concerns over this merger, but on paper, at least, if you've allowed other mergers to happen like Comcast, NBC Universal, et cetera, over the years, this one seems pretty cut and dry. And the only reason to put a stop to it is these personal vendettas that Donald Trump has against CNN.
I would say there are some legitimate concerns, and perhaps some people have said remorse over what Comcast got away with the NBC Universal purchase has influenced the decision to intervene. But I don't know, Matt, how does it seem to you, legit or not? I mean, this is an administration that hates regulation of any kind, so suddenly we're regulating.
At this point, honestly, it doesn't really matter. I mean, this is in litigation now. I think what we'll end up seeing is a settlement of some sort that requires AT&T to sell off something. Whether that will be CNN, which they have vowed not to do, they said that that's off the table. Whether it will be other aspects of Turner Broadcasting, which could mean TNT, TBS, something else that they may throw a bone to the administration and sell off, or if it could mean something more significant, like they sell, DirecTV or one of the other aspects of the company. I don't know what it's going to be, but I think they will do something to appease Trump and the Trump administration.
Yeah, I think Randall Stephenson, the AT&T chairman, has said, drawn a line in the sand with respect to CNN. I'm not selling. So who knows how long this goes on. But meanwhile, a much more horizontal deal where instead of being vertical, where one kind of company links up with another kind of company, AT&T and Time Warner being essentially in different businesses right now, you have the Fox Disney deal. But because Rupert Murdoch is the seller in that case, and he, God knows, is carrying Donald Trump's water day in, day out on Fox News and through the Wall Street Journal, I don't think those concerns are going to be quite so pressing.
Well, again, it sounds like Trump's main concern was the fate of Fox News. And as we know, Fox News isn't going anywhere. That remains under lock and key with Rupert Murdoch. Beyond that, Trump has also said that he thinks this would actually be a job creator, which, again, is a little confusing because in any sort of consolidation situation, you find your efficiencies. And I think everyone agrees that when Disney Fox goes through, there will be quite a few job losses.
That is not confusing. That is a lie. That is not something that happens in mergers. They do not create jobs.
Right.
I mean, most analysts say between 5,000 and 10,000 jobs will be lost. I mean, maybe ultimately the companies can grow larger and add jobs and supplement the losses. But that's just not true. I mean, this is going to be a job killer.
Yeah, and I have to say, as I mentioned before on the show, I was on the Fox lot having a lunch the day before this was announced, and you could already feel the anxiety and depression. And these guys are going to have to live with that for months and months, and it's going to be like dragging yourself through your day.
And Kim, the biggest concern is the fate of the Fox Broadcasting Company. The Fox Network, as we know it, basically will no longer exist. I think everyone agrees that the best-case scenario is that it continues with a mix of sports, some news programming, a lot of live programming, and maybe a few live library shows, but it's not going to be the robust broadcast network that we've known for over 30 years. As they cut off that complete infrastructure, that's where you're going to see a lot of job loss.
Yeah, and of course, there's worry about Fox Searchlight and their films, you know, as they have Shape of Water in contention, and they're a perennial awards contender. And, you know, how many movies, period, will the Fox Film Studio make? Some people think it will be drastically cut, and they make an array of movies. So, you know, we'll see whether Disney wants to preserve that. I think it's going to be hard in a way because people who can flee, I think, will flee because you don't want to wait around and find out what happens. So let me turn to one other pending deal, Sinclair. Sinclair is trying to buy the Tribune stations. People believe, many people, that they will use this to create another, you know, state news network, not unlike Fox News, and because it's a very conservative ownership. And I have to say, I almost wonder whether part of the deal between Murdoch and Trump, which seems to be a very close relationship, is to screw that up to preserve Fox News dominance. I don't know, Mike, what do you think?
Well, you know, I think the bigger issue is even if they don't create a Fox News rival, you know, Sinclair, once they consume Tribune, will own more than 230 TV stations across this country, representing 72% of households, which means they'll be basically in most homes in America. And, you know, the concern is their news product is very right-wing leaning. They've been accused of propaganda on many fronts. And for them to come in and basically dominate local television is cause for concern. This is a $3.9 billion deal that will dramatically change the face of local TV, what's left of it.
I think that's true. But the thing that's interesting to me is that we live in a media environment where Fox News for the past 20 years has had essentially a monopoly on conservative-leaning television news. And Murdoch has profited handsomely on that. So it must terrify him to think that there is a potential competitor to Fox News out there. And if Sinclair can get its act together and actually create that, they may be able to go after Fox News and go after some of that talent to create a real competitive landscape there. And honestly, that may not be the worst thing in the world if Fox News has a real competitor out there that can hold it to task and can compete for that audience. I don't know if this is what Sinclair has in mind or if it just wants to permeate local news with conservative commentaries, but they may have a larger goal.
Yeah, well, what terrifies me there, Matt, is that to take on Fox News, they'll have to go even to the right of Fox News. So you've got propaganda taking on even more propaganda.
Yeah, I don't know that that's true, though. I mean, it could just be a different brand. I mean, Fox News is its own kind of weird animal of news that it kind of creates its own stories and pursues its own agenda and kind of decides what the talking points are. And it does that because it has this immense power over its audience because it is the only game in town if you want to see that kind of news. If there was something else, maybe Fox News wouldn't do what it's doing. Maybe it would be a little bit more to the center. Who knows?
Well, oh, man, I don't think so.
I like your optimism, though.
I do, too. I have to say it must be so hard for Trump.
Hawaii is treating Matt well.
Yes.
I don't necessarily think that Sinclair will be a more right-wing Fox News. Let's just say that.
I think if it's as right-wing as Fox News, it's also an issue. I mean, it must be awfully hard for Trump to decide whether to allow another empire to promote his message or to serve his friend Rupert Murdoch. So we'll see how that goes. Thank you guys both.
Happy New Year.
Yeah, thank you.
That's Michael Schneider of IndieWire and Matt Bellany of The Hollywood Reporter. The new movie, All the Money in the World, tells the harrowing story of the 1973 kidnapping of 16-year-old John Paul Getty III, the grandson of billionaire oil tycoon J. Paul Getty. Michelle Williams plays the teenager's mother, Gail, who arrives in Rome to look for her son, only to face a horde of reporters wanting to know if she will pay the $17 million ransom. As the former wife of the patriarch's son, she doesn't have all the money in the world. All she can do is to plead with the kidnappers.
My son, Paul, must be very frightened right now. I know I'm frightened for him. So to the people who took him, I don't care why you did this, but I ask as a mother that you think of your own children or of the child that you once were and set my boy free. Thank you.
There's plenty of drama on the screen in Ridley Scott's new film, but what went on behind the scenes is unprecedented in filmmaking. In late October, Scott and the world learned of sexual assault allegations against Kevin Spacey, who had played Getty in his movie. It is already Hollywood lore how Scott decided to cut Spacey from the movie and replace him with Christopher Plummer. And to keep his late December release date, he said he could do it all in 6 weeks. That meant calling back the other actors in the film and preparing to shoot in key locations, all on very short notice. Michelle Williams returned, as did Mark Wahlberg, who plays Fletcher Chase, a former CIA officer serving as the Getty's hostage negotiator.
With oil up as much as it was this morning, you have amassed another fortune.
Well, what if the embargo is lifted and oil were to crash? I'd be exposed. I have never been more vulnerable financially than I am right now.
Mr. Getty, with all due respect, nobody has ever been richer than you are at this moment.
I have no money to spare.
What would it take? I mean, what would it take for you to feel secure?
More.
When I sat down with Sir Ridley, I noted that he had just turned 80 in late November. So you had this birthday, and your birthday present was that the star of your movie turned out to be a predator.
So, yeah, that's a way of putting it.
So, I mean, I'm just going to ask you, did you have an inkling beforehand that he had that reputation?
You know, I don't read that kind of press.
I don't think it existed. There was no that. Maybe no, a little bit in there, the... Yeah.
Come on, there are the journals, newspapers, which I'm not going to mention,
right,
that kind of predate on all that.
Right.
It's what I used to call page two crap,
right,
in England at
in
the
Britain,
time.
The tabloids,
and, yeah, the tabloids. So the tabloid press has always been there, and I don't look at that, so I don't really pick it up. And I'd met Kevin before a couple of times because he's a friend of Russell Crowe's buddies. Russell's a very good friend of mine. I've done 5 films with him.
And, a lot, yeah.
And so I met Kevin at the Berlin Festival almost like he just directed Bobby Darin and sang as Bobby Darin. Very talented man.
Very.
Got a good voice, just like Bobby Darin. And in the airport, he said to me, one day, which means that one day we will have to work together.
Right.
And this was it. So reading the script, I went, well, I do this. I work this way. I tend to read the script. And as I'm reading it, somebody's already flicking into my mind.
Right.
You know, after a lot of experience, when you start out, you look, there's a million actors out there. There actually aren't. There's always only a few for each category role. Kevin Spacey came up and Christopher also came up.
Right.
Then.
Did you have an instinct to think that he was too nice to play this terrible person?
Christopher?
Yeah.
No,
I mean,
on the other hand, I think Christopher has such a pleasant, kindly,
yeah,
twinkle, handsome geezer.
He's 88 years old.
I know.
Right?
But, you know, 88. Behind that smile, when you're speaking the same words, it becomes even more dimensional. It means that you think, oh, my God, this man is a real tough guy. And yet has the charm of the devil.
It does work.
As opposed to Kevin, who was the cooler, colder performance.
Yes. Sort of an opaque quality.
Very opaque, yeah. Whereas Christopher is ultimately the personification of charm.
So our show is very business-centric, as they may or may not have warned you.
Yeah.
So I wanted to just talk a little bit about the decision to ditch the Kevin version. Like, how quickly was that decided, first of all?
Hours.
The news breaks.
I function that way. I walk in and said, right, we're going to do this. Sit down. We're going to do this. If you're all on, we'll do it right now.
And who are you addressing?
My partners. I said, I can do it. I can get it together. I think by some phone calls, we'll somehow coordinate the dates so they can come together. we're going to do a quick budget now as to what it's going to cost, because we cannot let this film die for the action of this one person. That can't be. We've got to deal with it.
It broke a bit gradually. Like, there was first one allegation with Kevin Spacey, and then, as always happens, actually.
Then the tidal wave.
Then the tidal wave. But
then everything else followed. So I knew this was going to be.
I mean, were you in tidal wave or one allegation? Where was
that? No, I went with the one allegation. I went, oh, no. Mm-hmm. Thinking, knowing the way press can move at the moment.
Well, and there was so much to report.
They're looking for blood, right?
And there's so much blood.
Yeah, there is. So I knew immediately I was going to have a problem. And so I already started talking to them. My job is spotting the problem 2 miles away.
Right.
When I see it, I'll shoot it. I'll deal with it. I won't wait for it to come
to me.
There
was a debate in your mind, like, well, can we pull it off because he's a great actor? Or?
No. No, I knew the way the world is getting very, very socially, politically correct.
Well, is that political correctness, or is that just like we don't tolerate predatory behavior?
It's everything. It's everything that the world is, you know, encompassing and actually taking on board, you know.
I just don't want to leave the listeners with the idea that you don't take those allegations seriously.
No, of course I take the allegations seriously. And because I've never even thought about it, never done it. I've functioned in Hollywood at the top level for 30 years and I've never actually come across it.
That's remarkable.
Well, I've heard about it, but I don't look for it. And I've heard about Harvey.
Right, as had we all.
Yeah, but I don't chase it and pursue it and burrow down, find out how true is it. And that's great that these women came out and said this.
So you don't think, okay, maybe because he's a great actor, we can do this. You really,
no.
Early on, you think we are just absolutely screwed with this guy.
Color of the universe right now is to clean everything up. And I think, so that's a good thing.
Now, you have a long relationship with Tom Rothman, a man who does not love to spend money.
Yeah.
To put it, I'll say it, yeah, so you don't have to.
Yeah.
Really, really hates to spend money.
Yeah.
And you've already got a relatively, like a $40 million-ish picture going,
sure.
Which is on the higher level end for
an
awards type of film.
Yeah.
Of course, his options are stark, right? You either spend $10 million more to do this, or you have a $40 million.
Yeah, but we're spending it, not him.
You are.
Yes.
Explain that.
I have a very nice partner, that maybe the best experience I've ever had in Hollywood. Dan Friedkin, he pays for it.
He's the financier.
Totally.
So this was a pickup for Sony.
Yeah, oh, totally.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think Dan Friedkin, I'll say again, is the clearest, cleanest, best relationship I've ever had in my entire business life in Hollywood. Very straightforward. Great time, actually.
How did you two?
Yeah, well, I read a script and said, called Tom, and said, actually, you know what? You've got the best script in Hollywood. Oh. Dan had put it into Sony through his Dan's partner, knows Tom, and said, you know, we'd like you to distribute this. But
you weren't on board then.
No. Mm-hmm. I was halfway across the river in quite a big movie. And I could see at the other side of the bank, but I figured I'm not really going to get there because I'm not happy with the script. And so this one came in. I said, you know what? If I can put this other one off temporarily without hurting them, in this business, you stay with your head above water by being very straightforward with everyone you deal with. Do not around. I don't. I've been very clean all the time in Hollywood. I think that's why I'm still here. And I say what I think, which is another reason why I'm still here, I think. And I said, listen, I'm not going to make it. I will do this on a given date if I've got to turn the tap off properly.
This is another project, right?
Business
like postponing, right.
And I'll postpone it. While I work on it more, I'll do yours, and these are the conditions, and that's it. And he said, okay, done. And we're off. Boom, we're running.
Who sent you the script?
I think it was somebody at Sony. For me to say so, I may get it wrong.
Right.
So, but it was an executive, so I said, just read that.
And yet the financing was outside.
And yet the financing was outside, because I think they were worried that the film was spinning wheels for about 2 years. I did this with American Gangster, spun wheels for 6 years. Mm. And Steve said, read this, tell me I'm crazy. Isn't this a good film? So I said, yeah, I got it made. I can do that. There are these scripts that recline on the shelf where they've either had too much talk, too much chat, too much thought, too much f***ing pondering. I don't ponder. And there's a lot of pondering on the in-between levels
Too much executive hand-wringing or financier hand-wringing?
None of them have made films,
right?
Which is bizarre. They're making decisions by people who have never made a film.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It you know, be good if somebody had occasionally made a movie.
So you then, you like the script, you shoot your
Love
movie.
Love the script.
I assume it was a relatively seemingly painless shoot or the first
For me, it's fun. I usually make it all fun, a lot of fun. And we move so fast that everyone loves fast.
Yeah, you don't do that many 40, takes.
42 days.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then the thing happens.
Yeah.
And I've read where you then address this with Tom Rothman at Sony and say, we're going to do it this way. And he's like,
well, yeah, but I passed it in a partner's room first. So there's Dan Friedkin, Bradley, my producer in there from the my scot-free, in my office in scot-free, saying, we can do this. And consolidated decision. Okay, now we're going to tell Tom.
Had you spoken to the talent at that point?
Yeah, they knew something was up. So I'd had somebody, the best person to do that, a guy I use called Mark Huffman, always works with me. He's an Irish line producer. He's more than line producer, he's really a producer. He thinks creatively as well, not just financial. And I said, sit down, can we do this? Because I think I would definitely go straight forward to get Christopher. If I can get Christopher, we're on. So it's a matter of locations being available all together, who's busy, who isn't. Conform that and let's go.
Coming up after a short break, Ridley Scott tells us about the logistics of returning to a British lord's estate to reshoot with Christopher Plummer and shares his thoughts about the possibility of releasing the Kevin Spacey version of All the Money in the World. You're listening to The Business from KCRW.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. We're talking to Ridley Scott about his new film, All the Money in the World, which tells the story of the 1973 kidnapping of John Paul Getty III, grandson of industrialist J. Paul Getty. When Scott shot the film, Kevin Spacey played the role of Getty, the grandfather, a stingy billionaire loath to pay a penny of the $17 million ransom demanded by the kidnappers. But less than 2 months before the film's planned December 22nd release date, sexual assault allegations against Spacey became public. Just like that, Scott cut Spacey from the movie and reshot all his scenes with 88-year-old Christopher Plummer in the role. Many people, including Sony Pictures chairman Tom Rothman, thought reshooting in the time allotted was an impossible task. Scott knew he could do it, but he had to get Plummer on board. Christopher was supposed to be taking a little break, right? He was supposed to be resting from...
I flew from London and met him that night in the Four Seasons in New York, chatted, had a couple of laughs. He said, of course I'm interested. I'll read the script. I said, fine, let me know in the morning. He read the script, said, I'll do it. And
that must have been an enormous relief.
I knew he'd do it.
You just thought he was
the script's really good.
The horse waiting in the stall, and then he hears the bugle.
I already went and saw Mark Wahlberg the next day saying, listen, I need you, dude, I'll get you back home for Thanksgiving.
And he said, I'm in. Yeah. Everybody was
Michelle
good.
Was all on board. I'll do whatever you want.
I mean, it must have been a terrible feeling to think this whole movie is about to vanish into the dark.
I doubt you'd have even been released.
Right.
Because I think already, haven't they switched off House of Cards?
Right. They're redoing it.
They're going to redo it with somebody else?
No, I presume his character will be sadly dead.
Yeah. Well, it's such a good show.
Yes.
What a pity.
All of it is a pity. I mean, you see these enormously talented people who have these terrible compulsions that are just destroying.
But, you know, is it diminish their work? Shouldn't.
It's a difficult thing. Like, you know, do you erase the work? And I don't think so, but then again...
Well, you know, Francis Bacon was a really weird dude. Really weird dude.
A lot of people were weird dudes.
Does it diminish his work? No. Still the same work.
Yeah. Gauguin, not such a nice guy.
No. A lot of them are kind of strange. But, you know, I think, and I come from that whole world of, I was 7 years to art school. Major art school, like the Royal College of Art. David Hockney, all those guys. Kitaj, major painters.
Well, so as you make that argument, was there part of you thinking, I just wish we could just release this because it's good work and it shouldn't matter?
Yeah, no. I think...
You were just pragmatic.
I think it shouldn't matter is the seesaw phrase. That's the big phrase. Shouldn't matter. And actually, we got to stop that. It does matter. It does f-ing matter. Yeah.
So I feel like we were a little bit led on to believe that this role was not that big, but the role is big. It's not a small role.
Oh, yeah, it's key.
I heard like 8 or 9 scenes.
No, it's 22 scenes.
I don't know where I saw that, but that I was watching the movie thinking, he's in this. He's
no, like, 22. Yeah, yeah.
He is the straw that is stirring the drink here.
Yeah.
So you have to go back to this Lord's Manor or some such where you were shooting?
Lord Salisbury, yeah. It's a beautiful house. I couldn't get the Getty House original because now it belongs to a Russian who quite rightly says, there's no way I'm going to let a film unit in here. Thank you very much. He's dead right. Never let film in your house.
I hear it.
Don't know how good they are. Don't let him in. Cables and everything. Don't do it. So I went to Salisbury House, who does this and enables him to run the house because it's a huge house with a huge estate. And I'm sure the estate kind of semi-pays for itself, but I'm sure about keeping it open to the public 5 days a week, it also helps dramatically.
Right, in this day and age, that's what you have to do,
He's got 8,000 acres of spectacular land.
Which is expensive to maintain,
The equivalent of about 20 million acres in Texas. Major farmland.
So he was like, sure, come on back.
No, I had to fit into his days off, because he said, nope, the days off, I've got to work out this, and this. So we had to fit around that. So I adjusted Italy around that, because Italy was easier. As long as the locations are available, I just go in there. And I was using, funnily enough, the Mussolini building, which the neo-fascism, the architecture of Mussolini is fantastic. So I was in shooting the offices, the modern office of Jean-Paul Getty, in the forecourt where the little boy says, Mummy, whose building is that? She said, your grandfather's. That's Mussolini. Oddly enough, I put Getty above it and had it snow.
I did not make that connection. But,
no, that's right.
Both great guys, yeah.
So
you then just execute. It sounds like I actually was listening to you talk about this yesterday when you had a gathering, and I thought you seemed as happy as you could possibly have been ever in your career.
Yeah. I mean, I like a bit of stress, you know.
Drama.
I like pressure. If you don't do the job. But I kind of enjoy the pressure of it all.
So you love that. And now at the end, there's this little drop off in the date you were shooting for. What's that about? Like 3 or 4?
Oh, no. We swat because I didn't want to be in the shadow. I want to get as far away from Star Wars as possible.
I can understand that.
As far away from... there's another one.
Jumanji, The Greatest Showman.
Jumanji.
Downsizing.
I want to get away from them.
Those are big,
So I'm the mouse that roared on Christmas Day. But there's other ones on that day, and I think we're pretty good.
One more question. I read an answer when you were asked if the Kevin Spacey version would ever be released where you said you didn't think so, but then I thought I heard you say later...
Who knows? The world is a strange place. In 10 years' time, somebody might want to see it.
I think people would want to see it today, honestly.
Yeah. Well, isn't that the way it is? And I think, but that would be up to Dan to say so. And I think we'd wait for this to clear before you even think about that.
Well, I'm glad it worked out.
No, I think so.
Ridley Scott is the director of All the Money in the World. Thank you so much for telling us this crazy story. Congratulations on pulling it off.
Thank you.
And that's The Business. Caitlin Parker produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. You can subscribe to The Business as well as other great KCRW podcasts at kcrw.com/podcasts. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.